because it is so impressive, and it's just so different from anything else on Earth, and really is one of those superlative kind of places, lowest place on Earth. Even just sort of for the novelty of it, it's worth seeing it. But aside from that, it really is beautiful and impressive. And I feel like it's hard to do justice in describing what it looks like because it's so unique and otherworldly, but I definitely recommend it. It's a great spot to go. And, you know, we've gone back multiple times, so we really like it there.
Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
Authors of Where Should We Camp Next? A 50-state guide to amazing campgrounds and other unique outdoor accommodations.
Almost 12 years ago, we bought a pop-up camper that changed our lives and introduced us to the joys of RV travel.
Join us now as we talk about where to camp, what gear to bring, and the best food to cook.
We will also keep you dialed in to the latest RV innovations from people in the know.
So pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the RV Atlas. Today, we have back on the show Lauren Eber from A Fam with a Van, giving us part two of her epic three-part trilogy on spring desert camping. In our last episode, she gave us a terrific overview of Joshua Tree National Park, including places to go, things to see, places to eat, and campground recommendations inside and outside of the park. Now, today, she's back to talk about Death Valley National Park, and she's going to do the same thing. We're going to get a terrific overview of the park and of places to camp inside and outside of the park. And then in our next episode, she's going to come back yet again and cover Valley of Fire State Park, which is going to be a terrific episode as well. So I'm so glad all of you are here to join us for part two of this terrific podcast trilogy on spring desert camping. We'll be back in a second with Lauren Eber. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford. From a humble beginning in the garage of Frank Sargent near Flint, Michigan, Thetford has become a leading manufacturer of toilets and sanitation solutions for the RV, marine, and camping markets. Thetford makes going places easy, and they've been serving RV owners with great products since 1963. We've been using Thetford's holding tank treatments for over 12 years, and we never get the bad odors that some RVers complain about. Aquamax is Thetford's newest holding tank treatment. Its special blend of powerful enzymes and beneficial probiotics quickly eliminate odor, digest waste, and dissolve toilet paper. It is also formaldehyde and bronopal free, making it campground and marine friendly. It can be used in building tank systems and portable and recirculating toilets. Proudly made in the USA, Thetford's new family of Aquamax holding tank treatments have been extensively researched and tested safe for all RV and marine toilets, holding tanks, and septic systems. Aquamax is available in two fragrances, Summer Cypress and Spring Showers. And Aquamax also comes in a variety of sizes and formulations, liquid, dry packs, and toss-ins, so stock up today. To find out more about Aquamax and Thetford's complete lineup of products, head on over to Thetford.com. Welcome back to the show, Lauren Eber. Thank you so much for doing this incredible spring desert camping trilogy with us. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm happy to be here with you.
Awesome. So the first episode was Joshua Tree National Park. Today, we're going to cover Death Valley National Park. And then you're going to come back for Valley of Fire National Park. And there's a lot of like fire and death and religion and spiritual stuff here. But these are all like really beautiful places in the spring, right?
Yes, yes. But you know, that stark desert landscape, it always inspires those kinds of metaphors and descriptions, you know, the red rock and the sort of otherworldly moonscape features.
You Californians are spoiled. Okay, so you get us situated with Death Valley National Park. Like, how do we get there? Where is it? How far away is it from some major places where we might be able to fly into?
Yeah, so Death Valley is not the most centrally located of all national parks, but it's also not so bad to get to. It's only about a 2-hour drive from Las Vegas and a 4.5-hour drive from Los Angeles. So if you can get yourself to one of those major travel hubs, it's not so far to get to. And from most parts of California, it's a relatively reasonable drive.
Now, in the last episode, you gave us a nice overview of Joshua Tree for those that are not super familiar. And I feel like everyone's heard of the name Death Valley, but a lot of people haven't been there. And I don't know that people have an accurate picture of what it's really like. So give us an overview of Death Valley.
Yeah. So, I mean, the name definitely can sound intimidating, and I certainly would not plan to go to Death Valley in the summertime. It is literally one of the hottest places on earth, drier than the Sahara Desert, almost zero humidity. It hit a record high of 130 degrees in 2020. There are rumors that maybe it's been even hotter, like, a long time ago before the recording was quite so reliable, but, you know, it's hot. It has actually the lowest point in North America, Badwater Basin, which is negative 282 feet below sea level. It's only a couple hours drive from that lowest point, Badwater, to the highest point in the continental U.S., which is Mount Whitney at 14,505 feet. So you can do a fun little drive in a day from the lowest to highest points. You can't actually drive up to the top of Mount Whitney, but you can admire it from below.
Now, we're doing this as a trilogy of spring episodes, and you very specifically wanted to do this in the spring because you're suggesting that it's really beautiful to go here in the spring. So, for this New Jersey boy, like, just help me out here. Like, at what point would you say it's too late? You know, it's summer, it's too hot. I mean, where's that little dividing line? Like June or July 1st? Is there some place where you would split it up like that and say, don't come after this date?
Yeah, well, for this year, I would say that we're probably getting close to it. I think that you don't want to go, check temperatures much after April or certainly after May, because it's getting hot. And you can tell because the main campgrounds are reservable October 15th through April 15th. So that's what they kind of consider their season. And then beyond that, it's going to start getting uncomfortably hot.
All right, so let's get into the campgrounds. And in the Joshua Tree episode, you did such an awesome job of kind of summing up the options inside of the park and outside of the park. So what are our options here if we want to visit Death Valley National Park in an RV or tent camping or a van or whatever it might be?
Yeah, so the park is kind of oriented around the Furnace Creek Visitor Center. There's sort of a main road into the park from each side, from the Nevada side or from the California side. And the Furnace Creek Visitor Center is really your center point. And I definitely recommend kind of starting there, getting your maps, getting your bearings. And in terms of campgrounds, I sort of think the closer to Furnace Creek you can be, the better. If this is sort of one of your first trips to Death Valley and what you're looking to do is, you know, get through most of the main big sites in Death Valley.
So then what do we have for camping around the Furnace Creek Visitor Center?
Yeah. So the largest and sort of main campground in the park is Furnace Creek Campground. It's a national park campground, reservable October 15th to April 15th. It actually has 18 full hookup sites. But they do book up almost instantaneously 6 months in advance. So if you want to get one of those full hookup sites in the National Park Furnace Creek Campground, you know, you're going to go on there right when they open and try to book exactly 6 months out to the day. Some spots have a little vegetation for some privacy, but really we're out here in the desert. The landscape doesn't lend itself to a lot of privacy. So expect that you're going to see your neighbors, even with relatively spacious sites, but it's still, even with that, it's, you know, the landscape is beautiful in its sparse Death Valley way, and it's a great campground.
But basically a parking lot surrounded by all kinds of incredible beauty.
Yeah, I mean, this one is better than a parking lot. There's an overflow lot called Sunset that really is just a parking lot. We got stuck staying there once, and, you know, it was fine. It was still home base, but Furnace Creek is definitely an upgrade from that. It's still a nice campground with nice pull-in spots and it's scenic. So I don't mean to underplay it, but it's not like covered in vegetation or something where you have a you know, total privacy all to yourself kind of a space.
How about other NPS options?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and that one, by the way, is pretty big. It's got 150 sites total. So that's your best bet for starting out. There's also in that same area, Texas Springs, which is still a very good campground. And then if everything else is full, there is that overflow at Sunset that I just mentioned, which is still in Furnace Creek. But you know, that's going to be your sort of last choice. So outside of it, sticking with the national park campgrounds first, outside of Furnace Creek, there are some that are actually at higher elevations and might have cooler temperatures. So if you do find that you're going maybe after April 15th, I would look at one of these campgrounds where you're not going to be at sea level. You're going to have a little elevation and some cooler temps. So for example, Stovepipe Wells is still really convenient. It's only about 30 minutes outside of Furnace Creek. And if you're coming from the west, you're going to pass it on the way in. And there are some sites and some development around Stovepipe Wells as well. So that's still a great place to stay, just a basic campground. There's Mesquite Springs, about a little over an hour and 15 minutes from Furnace Creek in the northern part of the park near an attraction called Scotty's Castle. But Scotty's Castle has been closed for a long time and we don't know when it's going to open back up. So
is it a COVID related closure or?
No, it's not. I don't know why they closed it, but it's, you know, I think it maybe got damaged and some kind of a natural event and hasn't reopened. So
what is it?
It's like a building. Yeah. An actual castle that was built or not like
Hogwarts, Hearst Castle.
But yeah, no, but it's a structure. Yeah.
Okay.
I've actually never gotten to see it. So it's been closed for a while.
Well, we can't blame you. It's been closed.
Yeah.
So when it reopens, you will go visit and tell us
right, more.
Exactly.
So Mesquite Spring, if you're looking for solitude, then you can head out there to the northern part of the park. There are a few sort of tent only campgrounds, Emigrant, Wild Rose, Emigrant Canyon. And so Emigrant Canyon is at 4,000 feet elevation. Thorndike is at 7,400 feet elevation. Mahogany Flat is at 8,400 feet elevation and has some shade. So if you're going later in the season, even though those are a little farther from Furnace Creek, that's when you would say, okay, well, maybe it's worth it to me to stay someplace where it's going to be cooler and have to drive a little bit to get to some of the other attractions in the park.
All right, great. So any like private type campgrounds that would have more of the full hookups and amenities?
Yes. So at Stovepipe Wells, which I mentioned, which is about 30 minutes outside, but on the main road getting into the park, there's Stovepipe Wells RV Park, which is a small privately owned option. It has hookups, a restaurant, a saloon, and even a swimming pool. There's also the Panamint Springs Resort Campground, which has 10 full hookup sites, 26 dry sites, tent cabins, restaurant, bar, gas station, and general store. And that's all about an hour from Furnace Creek.
Okay, so lots of good options that are run by the NPS and a couple of sounds like just like a couple of decent options for a private campground. I guess it might be kind of a tough place to run a, you know, to own and operate a private campground, right? Because it is so hot in the summer and the season's limited.
Yeah, I think that's right. Although, you know, I mean, the season's still sort of fall to spring, so they still do get a pretty decent season. It's just flip-flopped. Instead of being closed in the winter, it's closed in the summer.
All right. Now, I love lodge options, and the National Park Service lodge options can be really, really cool. Anything like that that we might consider?
Yeah. So there are some great lodges inside the park that can make a trip to Death Valley super easy and convenient, and also sometimes can be reservable. You know, a little easier to get reservations. So if you are traveling from someplace where you're flying in, you can, you know, rent a car, drive in and stay at one of these lodges and have a great trip. So, and there are main lodges sort of located in Furnace Creek, in addition to the two places that I mentioned where there are those RV parks, Stovepipe Wells and Panamint Spring, they also have lodges. I think the best option would be to be in Furnace Creek at the Oasis at Death Valley. which has two lodges there, the Inn at Death Valley and the Ranch at Death Valley. You know, I think the Inn at Death Valley is slightly, you know, has one more star than the Ranch at Death Valley, but they're not so dissimilar. And the properties are sort of interconnected. There are pools, there's a golf course, restaurants. So really developed as sort of a full kind of resort lodge experience.
Now, are these like concessionaire run? Are they NPS lodges? Are they totally privately run? Who operates these?
They are privately run, not run by the Park Service. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Is any other lodge options or did that cover it?
No, I would say the Stovepipe Wells Village, which also has a pool, restaurant, and saloon, and the Panamint Springs Resort, which is about an hour from Furnace Creek. So those are going to be your three main options. And those are kind of the three main hubs of activity within the park. Also, Furnace Creek, Stovepipe Wells, and Panamint Springs. Those are the three areas where there are services.
And so Furnace Creek Campground is kind of your top pick, or like where you guys stay when you go?
Yes. That's always our first choice if we plan far enough in advance to actually have reservations, or if we're scouting for cancellations. We have just sort of shown up with no plan, and that's when we wound up at Sunset, and we still had a great trip, but it wasn't our first choice campground.
Well, it's good to know that you can do a spontaneous trip, though, if you want to, right? I mean, who cares if you're in the overflow, right? I mean, you got to do a spontaneous trip, which is pretty cool. Harder to do these days than it used to be.
Yeah, we were just sort of camping. We were dispersed camping out at the Alabama Hills, which is a couple hours away nearby. And we decided, hey, let's go head over to Death Valley and go to Badwater and check it out with the kids. So we did, on a whim.
All right, awesome. We're going to come back in a second with Lauren Eber from A Fam with a Van. We're talking about Death Valley National Park. And we'll be back in a second to talk about activities near Death Valley National Park. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at CampSpot. Let's face it, summers weren't meant to be experienced sitting at a desk or staring at a computer screen. It's time to call time out. CampSpot is here to help. CampSpot is an instant booking platform for camping across North America, featuring over 140,000 campsites. Research and book the best campgrounds, RV parks, cabins, glamping destinations, and more to find your time out. Whether it's your next epic adventure, girls' night out, or family reunion, CampSpot lets you filter your search results by the type of getaway you want. Browse by location, price point, site type, amenities, and more. CampSpot also offers premium inventory, real-time availability, and no membership fees so that you can find the best sites at the best campgrounds for the best prices. Picture it now. Fresh air in your lungs, cool breeze in your hair, warm hugs in your soul, and that grounded sense of self you'll only find when you spend time out. Book your spring and summer camping trips now. Find your time out. Find your CampSpot at campspot.com. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. We are here with Lauren Eber from A Fam with a Van, and we are in part two of an epic trilogy about spring desert camping. So this episode, we're talking about Death Valley National Park, and now we're going to dive in and talk about some activities and fun things to do when you visit Death Valley National Park. So, Lauren, what should we do first?
So, you know, anytime I'm talking about a national park, the first thing that I'm going to tell you to do is to go to a visitor center. Because, you know, they're fun. And I always think that it's important to talk to the rangers and figure out what's going on. Things change really quickly in national parks. There could be weather events. There could be, you know, other hazards that you need to be aware of. Or there could be something really special like, oh, there's been bear activity in this location. You want to go here or there. I mean, it's a bad example for Death Valley where there are no bears, but you get my point.
I totally get your point. I know it's such a great point, actually, because the number of times we've gone to a national park and we wanted to go on like this hike or that hike, and then we discover that there was flooding or something, or the boardwalk's closed or whatever it might be. So it is such a great tip to check in first at the visitor center for sure.
Yeah. And if you have kids, you can pick up the Junior Ranger booklet. There's a little 20-minute film to orient you to the park and some of the really crazy ecology there. So it is a place where I think it adds to your experience if you learn a little bit about the ecology and the crazy ways that things were formed. And don't ask me to explain it because I can't do it justice, but that's what the rangers are for. So start at the Furnace Creek Visitor Center, pick up your map and figure out your game plan.
All right. So let's talk about like your game plan. Like what are the top things you want to do in terms of drives or hikes or whatever it may be? What do you guys love doing there?
Yeah, so the great thing about Death Valley is that I think you can actually see a lot of the sites to kind of get a sense of what the park has to offer, even in just sort of a half day driving tour and getting out and walking around at some of the cool spots. I mean, you're obviously going to be better off, I think, with at least a full 1 to 2 days to really explore. But starting at Furnace Creek, you can take a scenic drive on the main road through the park to hit some of these must-see sites. Now, first on your list has to be Badwater Basin, which is the place where I was saying that it's the lowest place in North America. There's a sign. You can sort of walk out onto these salt flats and get a sense of just how barren and dry and stark the landscape is. It's pretty cool.
And it's amazing that it's like this tourist spot, though, because it almost in a sense sounds like here is nothing. I mean, what does it look like visually? I guess
it looks like there's a lot of salt in the ground, so it's sort of parched, kind of salty looking, dry, cracked earth.
It sounds sort of existential in a sense. Like, yeah. I mean, when you go, is there like that kind of like that a feeling of gloom? I'm just trying to, you know, position myself there.
It's not gloom. It's more sort of awe. Like people are walking. It's kind of quiet. There are a lot of visitors, so you definitely see a lot of people around. And there's an area as you're sort of walking out. First, you have to take your picture by the sign that says, you know, -282 feet. And then you sort of walk out and there's this area that's sort of been well trodden by all of the visitors. And you kind of walk out into this sort of very sparse area and look out and reflect. And it's kind of subdued energy, I would say, but more in a kind of an awed way than a like AWE awe, standing in awe of it, as opposed to gloomy or negative. It's impressive.
All right, cool. So where do we go next? I'm looking at your notes, seeing Devil's Golf Course, and I cannot wait to talk about those.
So the Devil's Golf Course is really fun. And I think it's probably named that because when you go there and you see all of these little like tufted salt formations, it would be like the hardest place on earth to hit a golf ball. So it's like a giant sort of salt flat, but it's not flat. It's really rough with all of these little salt formations, like teeny tiny kind of spires, and it's very hard to explain.
So the joke is it would be an absolutely horribly difficult place to play golf. Is that sort of the joke?
Right, exactly. Like that if the devil designed a golf course, this is what it would look like, because there's not a flat surface anywhere. It's all just crevices and
sounds like you're almost inviting people to come like late at night and like bring their golf clubs and cause trouble.
I would not recommend it, but you know, I'm sure people have. But you can kind of walk out onto them. So you know, it's fun for grown-ups and kids to sort of walk out onto these cool salt formations. And, you know, this is not something that is very accessible. So if you're unsteady on your feet or you're in a wheelchair, you can still see it, but you're not going to be able to walk out onto the formations themselves. But it is fun if you are able to just sort of walk out and check them out and get up close and kind of look at the what the salt crystals look like up close and try to take some pictures. So it's a cool spot.
So what other major things do we want to see like on day one?
Yeah. So I definitely would go to Zabriskie Point, which is, you know, you park in the parking lot and then there's a paved walkway up to a viewpoint where you see a really beautiful and impressive view, and you can see all of the different colors and shapes and so on at around the park, and it is just really, really beautiful. It shows you a sense of the kind of stark landscape, and you really do feel like you're on the surface of the moon or, in an otherworldly place. And this, by the way, is really popular if you want to get really special light at sunrise. So if you're the kind of person who can motivate for a sunrise hike, Zabriskie Point is your spot.
Sounds like a lot of this stuff would be amazing at sort of dusk or dawn, and midday it might be quite stark.
Yes, I think that's right. And especially if you're going later in the year or, you know, closer to the edges of the shoulder season where the weather is hot, you know, you could sort of manage that by staying at one of the lodges and spending the hottest time of the day either inside or swimming, and then going out at dawn and dusk to see some of the really special sights.
All right, cool. Is there anything else that would sort of fit into day one in a long extended day of touring?
Yeah, I would. The other thing that I would try to check out if you have only one day is Mesquite Dunes. So this is going to be over back in the direction of Stovepipe Wells. And they are just these giant sand dunes that you can go out and climb on and sled down and play on. And they're a lot of fun and also really beautiful and impressive.
Okay. Do we have any ghost towns in the neighborhood?
Of course. Just two other, like just sort of in the car viewpoints that you can get to before I take you to the ghost town are Artist Palette Drive and Dante's View. So those are, you're going to kind of head to those from that same Furnace Creek area and head out. And both of those viewpoints are worth getting to if you have the time.
And all this is like heavenly for photographers, I'm sure.
Yes, totally. Especially if you're able to go when the light's a little lower. Yeah.
All right. I want you to take me to a ghost town.
Okay. So there is a little ghost town called Rhyolite that is worth going to if you're into ghost towns. So that's actually in Nevada. So it's especially easy to get to if you're coming from Las Vegas, because it's, you sort of hit it approaching that direction. But you know, you can also get there just by taking the drive out there from Furnace Creek.
So it's just sort of it is literally an abandoned block or two of an old ghost town.
Yeah. It's, it was developed, from some prospecting that was taking place in the early 1900s. And, it was quartz. So a little sort of town sprung up over this quartz prospecting. So there are some old structures that are falling down and, but it was a whole kind of city. It had electricity. And then there was like a big financial panic in 1907. And that was kind of the beginning of the end of the town. And the mines started closing and banks started failing. And now there are just some remnants there. There are walls of the bank building, part of its old jail. The train depot is still a complete building, and the bottle house. Although the bottle house has been restored, for movie purposes. Yeah, so that's fun if you're a ghost town fan.
So what else if we have a couple days? Like what other types of, because now it seems like things are getting spread out to some degree, right? Like you have to make some choices.
Exactly. So, and that's kind of the thing is you can see all of those main sites that I saw pretty conveniently from the Furnace Creek area. But then some of these other attractions, you're talking more like 1 to 2 hour drive. So you are kind of deciding, okay, what do I really want to see? So the next one is called the Ubahibe Crater. And hopefully I'm actually saying that right. But the Ubahibe Crater is like a large volcanic crater that is what it sounds like. It's a giant crater. It was formed from volcanic activity, and there are cinder fields from the volcano that cover kind of the area all surrounding it. And it's pretty impressive. It's very, very big.
It sounds like there's like no place on Earth like this. And it to some degree defies easy description a lot of these places.
Yes. As I'm sitting here trying to describe what they look like, I'm like, I really, you got to just go see it or Google it because it's hard to describe what these things look like, but it's definitely worth seeing.
All right. How about like the big drive from the lowest spot to, you know, like you said, you can't go to the summit in a car, but the, you know, the what kind of drive can you do from the bottom to the top?
Yeah. So, it is about a 2-hour drive to get from, you know, the main parts of Death Valley out to Mount Whitney. And like I said, you can't drive all the way up to the top of Mount Whitney, but you can drive out this road called Whitney Portal Road and get to basically that parking lot where you would start if you were going to actually do the hike up to the top. And there are some campgrounds there. So you could even theoretically camp at both places, although check the weather because it's a lot colder at Mount Whitney than it is at Death Valley at any given time. But we have done this. So that day that we decided to sort of spontaneously go to Death Valley, we had been camping near the base of Mount Whitney and, you know, did the drive up to that, to the parking lot, and it was all frozen over. There's this beautiful waterfall that's there, so that was frozen. So we were, you know, walking on the frozen pond and checking out the frozen waterfall, and sort of getting a sense. You can see the peak of Mount Whitney, which really sort of dominates the landscape, and just the view of all of those mountains there in the Eastern Sierra, which are so impressive. So it is a neat thing to do, to kind of take in the scale of these giant snow-capped mountains, and then 2 hours later you are standing at Badwater Basin in this place that looks like it's never seen water before.
Oh, so my god, it's like you Californians live on another planet. you really do. All right, how about some kind of sad history here at this internment camp?
Yeah. So, you know, when I am in this area, I do think that it's important personally to check out some of the less pleasant aspects of our history. And there is Manzanar, which is a Japanese internment camp on this stretch of Highway 395, which is, again, like around 2 hours from Death Valley and very close to the Whitney portal that I was just talking about. And the internment camp there are now some sort of museum style signs and exhibits that talk about some of the history leading up to the formation of the internment camps, what life was like for Japanese Americans who were forced to leave their homes and you know, imprisoned in the camps, what it was like for children growing up there. You learn about the food and the work that the people did, and and you see some of the recreation that they had there. But it's not an easy or fun visit, but very enriching. We took our kids when they were, you know, I don't know, maybe 7 and 9, and they got a lot out of it even at that age, and as did we as adults. So if you have the time and you're in that area, I definitely think it's a worthwhile stop.
Well, it's absolutely, because I just, you know, one of those things we don't want to forget. We don't want to forget those dark parts of our history too, because we don't want to repeat things like that. So, I mean, if I made the trip out to Death Valley National Park, I would absolutely carve out the time to go there and let the kids learn about this and to learn about it myself. So yeah absolutely.
It's definitely worthwhile, and nothing compares to actually being there and walking around as opposed to just learning about it in a book. And if you're going to go to sort of this part of California, it's in the Eastern Sierra. It's the Highway 395 corridor, which is a very much, much storied corridor. And especially if you follow kind of van lifer social media, you'll see a lot of shots of the Alabama Hills and the Eastern Sierra. It is just a really, really gorgeous part of California, and definitely worth going to. And I recommend a campground called Tuttle Creek, which is a very big campground and at lower elevation. So if you're going to tour Mount Whitney, you can stay there without having to freeze. And it's pretty big and not too hard to reserve. So if you want to do some of this exploration around Mount Whitney and Manzanar and Lone Pine, Alabama Hills, then take a look at Tuttle Creek as a reservable campground, or there's also dispersed camping.
All right. Awesome, Lauren. Thank you so much. We're going to come back in a second, and we're going to talk about some dining options when we visit Death Valley National Park, because everyone's going to be hungry after exploring and driving around all over the place. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Go RVing. Go RVing's website, GoRVing.com, is packed with incredible stories and tips and tricks that will inspire you to get the most out of your RV and enjoy every second of life on the road, at the campground, or somewhere far off grid. And GoRVing.com's This Is RVing tab is a great place to start your journey. Do you want to hit the road with your furry friend and see America together? RVing is a perfect way to travel with your pets. Check out GoRVing's Pawsome Adventures under the This Is RVing tab, and you will find tips and tricks for traveling with your favorite beloved pet and great information about campgrounds that have amazing puppy parks and other pet-friendly activities and amenities. Have you ever dreamed about leaving your 9-to-5 behind and working remotely while traveling full-time in your RV? Check out Heath and Alyssa Padgett's Beginner's Guide to Earning Remote Income for a step-by-step guide to earning a living while traveling across America in your RV. Go RVing's This Is RVing tab is absolutely packed with tips and tricks from RVers who have been there and done that. And this is just a small sample of the inspiring content you will find there. To find out more about RVing or find a dealer or a campground near you, head on over to GoRVing.com. Welcome back to the show, Lauren. All right. Thank you so much for giving us that overview. I mean, this is just such a unique part of the country and just such a unique RV or van trip to take. But you do have some dining options for us as we wrap up the show here. So where are some good places to grab some grub after spending a day exploring?
Yeah. So I do have to say, you know, you're not coming to Death Valley for the food. This is not like one of these parks that has a great gateway town with all kinds of funky local options. You know, I always like to give you this sort of local joint or the, you know, great ice cream shop. In Death Valley, the dining, like the landscape, is a little sparse, but you're not going to starve. So there are some restaurants run by the concessionaires that run the lodges. Those are going to be your best options. So in Furnace Creek, both the inn and ranch at the Oasis at Death Valley have restaurants, cafes, and even a saloon. And then again, the resorts in Stovepipe Wells and Panamint Springs also offer basic restaurants. So, you know, this is a spot where it's a good place to take advantage of your RV kitchen and do some of your own cooking. But if you do want a dinner out or a meal out, there definitely are options that are perfectly fine. And then if you make the drive to Mount Whitney or the Manzanar, Alabama Hills, that sort of area, there are some places in the tiny little blink and you'll miss it town of Lone Pine. So you can check out the Alabama Hills Cafe or the Bonanza Mexican restaurant.
This sounds so good. And, you know, I am picturing Alabama Hills because I know that Go RVing has done commercials there and photography there. Like it is an epic Instagrammable kind of spot, right?
Yes. And many of the places in old Western movies that you think of as being somewhere not in California were actually shot in the Alabama Hills. And, you know, we could do a whole episode just about the Alabama Hills, but there is a little museum and you can pick up a map that shows you, you know, what was filmed where in the Alabama Hills. There are some cool rock formations. So if you're interested in that, you can pick up a little map in Lone Pine to do a little Alabama Hills tour.
Lauren, watch what you say on this podcast because you are being recorded right now. So when you say something like, oh, we could do a whole episode on the Alabama Hills, well, basically you've just committed yourself to doing it. So thank you so much for covering Death Valley National Park. I mean, we've never covered it on the podcast before. It sounds like a really epic place for an RV trip, but also a really different kind of RV trip. Like as I was listening to you, it just the starkness of it and the moody of it feels kind of overwhelming, but I guess that's part of the point, though, right?
Yes, and it's one of those places that you really just have to see because it is so impressive, and it's just so different from anything else on Earth, and really is one of those superlative kind of places, lowest place on Earth. Even just sort of for the novelty of it, it's worth seeing it. But aside from that, it really is beautiful and and impressive. And I feel like it's hard to do justice in describing what it looks like because it's so unique and otherworldly, but I definitely recommend it. It's a great spot to go. And, you know, we've gone back multiple times, so we really like it there.
And it sounds like everything's so far apart that that's almost a necessity, really, to see all these different things is to go back multiple times.
Right. Yes.
I'm so excited for next episode too, Valley of Fire State Park. I mean, this is an epic podcasting trilogy here. I feel like that we should win an award for this, or you should win an award for best podcast trilogy in the travel department. So we will see you next week for Valley of Fire State Park. And I really, really appreciate you coming back on the show. Thank you so much, Lauren Eber.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And make sure everyone that you follow Lauren Eber at A Fam with a Van on Instagram. It's a really fun account to follow, and you can check out all of her adventures out in the van all over the place. So we'll see you next week, Lauren. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
A big thank you for listening to this episode of the RV Atlas, and a big thank you to our sponsors, to Neighbor, the Thetford Corporation, Camp Spot, Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts, RV Snaphead, and Go RVing. To find out more about the topics discussed in this show, head on over to thervatlas.com. And to join the friendliest group of RVers, head on over to the RV Atlas group on Facebook. If you enjoyed this show, please consider leaving us a review over at iTunes. And we'll see you at the campground.